Good morning.
Good morning.
We'll take your Bibles out and turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, where we're going to be this morning. 1 Corinthians chapter 7. The last several weeks, we've been studying the book of 1 Corinthians, moving through this book that was written, this letter that was written to the church at Corinth. Last week, we were at the end of chapter 6. This morning, we're going to follow up with chapter 7. Where Paul is dealing with some specific questions now that the church at Corinth has written to Paul. Just think for a second what it would be like if we had access to the Apostle Paul today. And maybe you could write a letter to him, or maybe text him, or call him on the phone, and just, you know, ask him a question. Maybe ask for advice about something that you're thinking about. What should I do as a Christian about this circumstance that I'm in? What a blessing that would be. Well, that's the blessing that these Corinthians had. They had the ability to talk to an apostle through these letters and ask his advice and ask for his judgment and ask for his help on certain things. So as we get to chapter 7, Paul begins with dealing with some of those questions. He's going to come back to some of those questions like meat sacrificed to idols in chapter 8. Chapter 12, he's going to talk about spiritual gifts. In chapter 16, he's going to deal with the collection of for the saints. But here in chapter 7, he's going to deal with questions about marriage. So some of these Corinthians had apparently written to Paul about, you know, questions about marriage. We'll get into some of those details in just a second. But I want you to just understand at the outset, as we look at this chapter, this is a really challenging chapter. If you haven't read this chapter before, because what Paul is doing here is he's, number one, answering very specific questions. Number two, dealing with a very specific situation and the context of that situation. And number three, that leads to giving very specific advice. So specific questions regarding a specific situation leading to very specific advice. So notice verse 1. He says, "Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman." So apparently they wrote something about how a man and a woman deal with one another. In verse 26, he says, "I think then that it is good in view of the present distress that it is good for a man to remain as he is." This is the situation he's dealing with, you know, the present distress. We don't exactly know the details of what that present distress is. And his advice in this chapter, or at least part of his advice in this chapter, is that those of you who are single, or those of you who are widowed, I want you to remain single. I want you to remain unmarried. In verse 25, he says, "Now concerning virgins, I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is trustworthy." He says, "I think it's good for a man to remain as he is." So Paul is dealing with very specific situations here that, by and large, don't necessarily have application universally to every situation and every context that we might find ourselves in. And another thing that is challenging about this chapter is that it contains concessions and opinions that Paul is dealing with here. He's not intending for us to take everything that he says here and apply it universally to every person in every situation. We read in verse 25, he says, "I give an opinion." So Paul gives us some opinions here. At the same time, he also gives us some universal commands, some things that apply regardless of who you are, what situation that you're in, whether you're in any present distress in the first century or not. And so we have to look at this chapter, we have to understand, we have to be willing to discern, or be able to discern, is he giving us an opinion here, an advice given to these Christians in the first century with this situation, or is he giving us commandments that apply to all of us? Regardless of that, I think there are some very relevant principles that we can take from this chapter this morning regarding, number one, marriage, number two, regarding singleness, number three, living in difficult circumstances. Regardless of the opinions or the concessions that he gives here, and the specific situation that he's dealing with, there are some principles that I want to take out from this morning. So, let's just look at those three categories: marriage, singleness, and living in difficult circumstances. First of all, what does Paul say about marriage here? There are really two things that I want to highlight in this section. what Paul says about marriage. In verses 1 through 5, he specifically talks about the proper role of the sexual relationship within marriage. So let's read verses 1 through 5. Paul writes, "Now concerning the things about which you wrote, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. But because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each woman is to have her own husband. The husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise also the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and come together again, so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control." So in verse 1, he says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. That idea of touching a woman is a euphemism for having sexual relations. And I think what Paul is doing here is he's highlighting one of the statements or one of the arguments that the Corinthians had used in their letter to him. If you're reading a translation like the ESV or the Christian Standard Bible, you'll notice that though that sentence is in quotation marks, probably because he is lifting that out of their letter and he's quoting it, he's going to answer this argument. It seems to me that what the Corinthians had done is some of them had overreacted to the immorality, not only in their culture, in their city around them, but also even in the church. We've already noticed how immoral some of these Christians were acting. Remember in chapter 5, there was a man who was living with his father's wife, his stepmother. And we noticed last week that some were visiting prostitutes and justifying that immorality. On the other hand, some of the Corinthian Christians were overreacting that and in response to that, saying that it is good for a man not to get married at all, or if you are married, to remain completely abstinent. And so he responds to that by saying in verse 2 that because of immoralities, each man is to have his own wife, and each man is to have her own husband. Marriage serves a lot of purposes. And in this context, he's arguing that marriage can actually serve as a protection against immorality. That a husband and wife, they have a right to enjoy the sexual relationship. And that actually gives them a protection against immorality, especially when they're living in an immoral culture like Corinth. Now, understand, marriage is not just for this. Marriage is not just a protection against immorality. In Ephesians chapter 5, Paul talks about another purpose of marriage is to model Christ and his church. And the relationship that they have, how the wife submits to her husband in the way that Christ submits to the church. And the husband is to lay down his life for his wife in the same way that Christ did. But think about this. I mean, when we think about the Catholic Church and some of the abuses and some of the scandals that have come, a lot of that really is because of the priest having been forbidden to ever get married. And as a response to that, not justifying any of that, but the false doctrine begets more sin. And so what Paul is arguing here that we should not be commanding people that you should not ever get married, because marriage has a way of protecting against immorality. He goes on to say in verses 3 through 5 that there is actually a responsibility and obligation between a husband and a wife whenever they're married. Says in verse 3, the husband must fulfill his duty to his wife, and likewise also the wife to her husband. Sexual relations are actually a duty or an obligation to your spouse. You owe it to them. And notice that it goes both ways. Paul doesn't favor the man. He doesn't favor the woman. He says, instead, you both have an equal obligation. You have a mutual responsibility to consider the other person. That's what Paul is saying here. Consider the feelings and the needs of the other person. There has to be mutual consideration of one another's needs and feelings. This is not one-sided. And he says that if you do choose to be abstinent, verse 5, do it for a limited time. Stop depriving one another, except by agreement for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer and then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now let me pause right here and just make this application. When you look especially at verses 3 and 4, These verses should never be used as a club or a way to manipulate or pressure or to demand anything from your spouse. Number one, we need to remember that your body as a Christian does not just belong to your spouse. Your body as a Christian belongs to the Lord. And what is your responsibility to your spouse? If you're a husband, your responsibility is to lay down your life for her. That does not mean you demand things from her. That means you sacrifice yourself for her. Same goes for a wife. The wife is to submit to her husband in a Christ-like way. So I just want to emphasize this very carefully. Sometimes Christians do take these verses out of context and use them as a club to manipulate, to get what they want from their spouse, regardless of what their spouse feels or what they need. That's not what Paul is saying. Paul is just making the argument here that marriage has a very distinct purpose, and that it is a good thing. And in fact, he's saying that there is a proper role of sex within marriage. Let me make an application to us today. I think sometimes we are like the Corinthians, or at least like some of these Corinthians, who have overreacted to the immorality within their culture. And we speak very strongly against the immoral conduct that we see in our world today, but we go to the opposite extreme, and then we treat sex as if it's something that's dirty, or something that is tainted, or something that is shameful. I wonder if we have overreacted to the immorality we see in our world today, in our country, maybe even in our community, in our society. And we boldly condemn the errors of homosexuality and adultery and fornication, and we ought to. Paul boldly condemned those things. But do we fail to say what else God says about sex? Do we fail to teach on the holiness and the goodness and the proper way that we use our bodies within marriage? Do we teach what God says in the very beginning? Remember in Genesis chapter 2, when God created Adam and Eve, he made them without clothes, right? And he brought them together, and it says in Genesis chapter 2 that they were naked and felt no shame. Do we teach about that? Do we teach about Song of Solomon? God has a lot more to say about the sexual relationship between a husband and a wife than just don't have sex outside of marriage, or don't have sex with someone who is of the same gender as you. God has a lot more to say about it than just that. So I'm afraid that we sometimes are like the Corinthians. We overreact to the immoral ways of how the world has twisted what God has made, and we almost treat it as something as it is twisted. And so I'm afraid that we treat sex as shameful and even borderline sinful. It's a taboo topic. And I understand that it is a personal topic that we keep between a husband and a wife. And there's a proper way that we talk about it. There's an inappropriate way to talk about it. There's a proper way. But especially if we think about raising our children, what message are we teaching our children if we don't talk about what God says? What message are we communicating if we are silent on what God says? One more thing on marriage that Paul talks about is the permanency of marriage. Read with me 1 Corinthians chapter 7, beginning of verse 10. But to the married I give instructions, not I, but the Lord, that the wife should not leave her husband, but if she does leave, she must remain unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband, and that the husband should not divorce his wife. But to the rest I say, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who is an unbeliever and she consents to live with him, he must not divorce her. And a woman who has an unbelieving husband and she consents to live with her, she must not send her husband away. For the unbelieving husband is sanctified through his wife, and the unbelieving wife is sanctified through her unbelieving husband. For otherwise your children are unclean, but now they are holy. Yet if the unbelieving one leaves, let him leave. The brother or the sister is not under bondage in such cases, but God has called us to peace. For how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? Here again, I think Paul is dealing with some specific questions that the Corinthians had asked. If you're a Christian and you're married to an unbeliever, one of the questions it seems like they were wondering is, well, should I leave my unbelieving spouse? Do I have an obligation to them? They're not a Christian. And so should I leave that? And what Paul says is divorce is prohibited. Verses 10 and 11, he says, I don't give these instructions, but the Lord does. I think what he's doing there is he's making direct reference to what Jesus taught in the Gospels about marriage and divorce. You remember the conversation Jesus had with the Pharisees when they came to him and they asked, is it lawful for a man to divorce his wife for any reason at all? And what Jesus says is, have you not read from the beginning, he's going again to Genesis chapter 2, the beginning teaching of marriage. And he says that the two become one flesh, so they are no longer two, but one flesh. And what God has joined together, let no man separate. Paul is just passing those same instructions along. Listen to what Jesus said, that a man should not divorce his wife. And also, he also says a woman should not divorce her husband. Notice in verse 11, he gives this kind of parenthetical statement, but if she does leave, she must be unmarried or else be reconciled to her husband. This is I don't want to use the word concession, but this is dealing with if she does end up divorcing, what are her options? She should remain unmarried or she should be reconciled to her spouse. In this case, remarriage is not an option. There are only two options here. This verse deals with the circumstances, the sinful choice that was made, and does not provide a second reason for divorce. I included that here because this is a passage which has often been abused and misunderstood to teach something that the Bible does not teach about divorce. The permanency of marriage also extends to marriage whenever there are two. One is a Christian and one is not. So verses 12 to 16, Paul deals with that. Again, some of these Christians were wondering, my spouse is not a Christian, so should I leave my spouse? And what Paul says is, no, you shouldn't. Your marriage as a Christian is still binding, whether they are a believer or unbeliever. And Paul gives two reasons why you should not leave. First of all, he says that your marriage is sanctified. That is, that it is holy to the Lord. That God has joined you together, just like we said in Matthew 19. That God is the one who has brought you together, and what God has joined, let no man separate. But he also talks about the influence that you as a Christian might have on your unbelieving spouse. He says in verse 16, for how do you know, O wife, whether you will save your husband? Or how do you know, O husband, whether you will save your wife? A wife and a husband, if they're married to an unbeliever, has a lot of influence on them. Your wife or your spouse, that's the person that you're closest to. And your major concern needs to be for the salvation of their souls. And you've got a very unique responsibility and opportunity to help them come to the Lord. I think about what Peter wrote in 1 Peter 3 to wives who were in this exact situation. 1 Peter 3, verse 1. In the same way, you wives, be submissive to your own husbands, so that even if any one of them are disobedient to the word, they may be won without a word by the behavior of their wives. Notice that the emphasis here is on just your conduct, not your words, not your nagging, but just your conduct, your character, your integrity, as they observe your chaste and respectful behavior. And I think going back to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, Paul also makes an application to your children. That if, an unbeliever and a believer marry and have children, he says, your children are sanctified, not automatically through your faith. And your faith is not just automatically passed down to your children or given to your spouse, but think about the influence that you can have as a Christian upon your family. Here's the application for us this morning. That marriage is hard sometimes. Now, why were they having to ask this question of, should we leave our spouse? Probably because things were really hard. If you are married to an unbeliever, and for you personally, you love the Lord, and you're at the assembly every week, and that is just really hard on your marriage, if your husband, if your wife, wants that attention, that time on Sunday morning, think about how hard that is. And Paul is emphasizing, yes, marriage is hard. But that's why God teaches. That's why Jesus says, what God has joined, let no man separate. Sometimes we think that Christians have easy marriages, but not so. Sure, it ought to be easier because we have a commitment to selflessness. We have a commitment to the Lord. But sometimes Christians have really hard marriages. And it's easy to think that, you know, if you've been married for a while, maybe you thought that, you know, when I get married to a Christian and I'm a Christian, it's just going to be fine and dandy. It's going to be easy and things are going to be rosy. And you get a few years down the road and you realize it's not really that easy. Sometimes there are troubles. Sometimes there are difficulties. Sometimes there is sin that brings troubles and difficulties. It's easy to think it shouldn't be this hard. Or it's easy to look at other couples and say, well, they've got it easier than me. Well, think about what Jesus teaches, that the permanency of marriage is the way God designed it in the beginning. Well, secondly, Paul deals with singleness. There's just one point I want to make from this point. Read with me 1 Corinthians chapter 7. In verses 6 and 7. Paul says, but I say this by way of concession, not of command. Yet I wish that all men were even as I am myself. However, each man has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. What Paul is saying here is that it's good to be married and it's good to enjoy the blessings of marriage. But I wish that every person were as I am. And I think he's in the context talking about being single. So Paul actually talks about the advantage of being a single person. Paul preferred to be single. And he actually advises in this chapter those that are currently single or have left their spouse or who have been divorced or who are widowed, you need to stay single. I advise you to stay single. Look at verses 25 and 26 again. He says, now concerning virgins, or maybe your translation says something like the betrothed or those that are currently single. I have no command of the Lord, but I give an opinion as one who by the mercy of the Lord is untrustworthy. I think then that it is good in view of the present distress that it is good for a man to remain as he is. In other words, I advise you not to get married. To us as Americans, that sounds really strange, doesn't it? Because we typically think of marriage as kind of an expectation, almost the standard that we look to. Remember, Paul is dealing with questions that these Christians had asked. And if there were some Christians in Corinth who were saying that you should not get married because it's immoral or somehow it's morally superior to be single, maybe they were starting to wonder, should I really even seek a spouse? If I'm engaged, should I go through with the plans? And what Paul says is, I advise you to stay single. Not because it's morally inferior, not because you're going to sin if you do so, but because, in verse 26, because of the present distress. Now, I mentioned earlier that we don't really know exactly what this means. Probably it's some sort of persecution that these Corinthians faced. As we know, a lot of the early Christians faced intense persecutions. What Paul says is, look at your circumstances, and look how hard it is to even just be a Christian to begin with. But then, whenever you get married, not only do you have to think about your own welfare, your own well-being, but now you've got to think about your spouse. He says in verse 28, as kind of a caveat to this, but if you marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned yet. Such will have trouble in this life, and I am trying to spare you. He says, if you get married, you're going to have trouble. And I don't think he's talking about, you know, your marriage is just going to be difficult. But I think he's talking about the circumstance that they're going to be living in, that it will be challenging. He advises singleness. Now, again, just take a step back here and remember that what Paul is dealing with is specific circumstances. He advises singleness here, but actually in 1 Timothy chapter 5, verse 14, he advises younger widows to get married. So obviously it's not wrong to get married. Under different circumstances, Paul gives different advice. So keep that in mind. But why does he say that you should not get, why does he advise not getting married? Well, again, think about the trouble that, as a Christian, under difficult circumstances, being persecuted. Maybe there's a threat of imprisonment. Maybe a threat of your property being taken away, or maybe a threat of even you losing your life. Think about the questions that will be running through your mind as a husband or a wife. You know, is my faith going to put my spouse in danger? Is, you know, if I am put in prison, who's going to provide for my wife? Who's going to provide for my children? I think those are the kinds of things that these Christians were having to deal with and having to work through, and Paul is giving response to. And so he's focusing on undistracted devotion to God. Verse 32, he gives kind of the rationale behind his advice for singleness. I want you to be free from concern. One who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, how he may please the Lord. But one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interests are divided. The one who is unmarried and the virgin is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be holy both in body and in spirit. But the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. But I say, for your own benefit, this I say for your own benefit, not to put a restraint upon you, but to promote what is appropriate and to secure undistracted devotion to the Lord. So what he's saying is that marriage adds an additional responsibility that can distract you from the Lord. Not necessarily, but it can distract you from the Lord and bring divided interests. I don't think he's talking about, like with Solomon, remember, he married these unbelieving wives, these foreign wives, and it says they turned his heart away from the Lord. I don't think that's what he's talking about, that if you get married, they're going to turn your heart away from the Lord. But what he's talking about is, you know, as a Christian in difficult circumstances, when you get married, you've got someone else to think about. You've got an additional burden. And so think about how this was true for Paul. How his singleness was actually an advantage for him. He could have chosen to get married. In fact, he talks about he had a right to do that, but he chose not to for the sake of the gospel. You know, it would have been really hard for him to do the traveling that he did and to suffer the persecution that he did, free from concern if he had a wife or children to take along. And so he was free to do the work of the Lord. Here's an application for us. Think about what Paul says. If you are a single person, think about how your singleness can actually be a help rather than a handicap, or rather than a hindrance in your service to God. We said this earlier, but marriage is often held up as kind of an expectation, almost for us Christians, an unspoken standard that if you want to really be complete as a Christian, you need to get married. And that's not true. Now think about Paul. Was Paul a complete Christian? How faithful was he to the, and how useful and how fruitful was he to do the work of the Lord? And especially if you have the gift of self-control, use that gift for the service of the Lord. Singles can be extraordinarily useful and fruitful in the kingdom. I was thinking about this as well. Why didn't Jesus ever get married? I mean, the Bible doesn't talk about that. We know for a fact that he was single. But we can only speculate why Jesus did not get married. And so take this for what it's worth, but there has to be a reason for why it was God's will that Jesus didn't get married. And I think, this is just my opinion, but it had something to do with the fact that, number one, Jesus had a purpose to fully devote himself to the Lord. But secondly, think about the trouble that his wife would have been through to see him suffer so much as he did. Jesus was absolutely complete, even though he never married, and he was fruitful in the Lord's kingdom. So if you are single, how could you take encouragement and comfort from that? But finally, here's a point that applies to all of us, regardless of your marital state. Paul deals with our focus in life here. So read with me verses 29 to 31. He says, "But this I say, brethren, the time has been shortened, so that from now on those who have wives should be as though they have none, and those who weep as though they did not weep, and those who rejoice as though they did not rejoice, and those who buy as though they did not possess, and those who use the world as though they did not make full use of it. For For the form of this world is passing away. So Paul talks about how life is short here. And he's dealing with the present distress that these Christians are going through. All Christians here in Corinth would be suffering this present distress, whether they were married or not. So the question is, how should they live their lives in view of this? He says in verse 29 that the time has been shortened. Shortened for what? What time is he talking about? Then at the end of verse 31, the form of this world is passing away. What he's saying is the time when this world will be destroyed, will be completely done away with, this world, that time is short. Jesus is coming back soon. And we realize that it's been almost 2,000 years since he's written this, but the point still stands. Jesus is coming soon. It could be any moment now. The time is short. So how should we live in view of that? Paul says, if you're married, act as if you are not married. He says, for those that grieve, those that weep, act as if you don't grieve. And for those that rejoice, live as though you don't rejoice. For those who use the Lord or have possessions, act as if you don't use the Lord or don't have possessions. Now, what is Paul saying there? Is he saying that if you're married, you have no obligation? Obviously not. He's making the greater point here. Paul is not saying that we neglect our spouse, that we ignore joy and grief or give up what we have. He's asking us to consider our perspective. He's asking us to consider where your focus is. Loosen your grip on those things that we hold on so tightly to that are just temporary. You know, like marriage, we tend to focus so much on marriage and how, you know, as we said, we hold it up as a standard, and that's where my happiness is. And Paul says that's not where your ultimate happiness lies, single or not. Your ultimate happiness is not in your possessions. It's not in the earthly joys that you experience. Those things are going to pass away with this world. And if there's ever a time that that becomes clear, it is time when things are hard. These Christians were going through a present distress. So I'm going to conclude on this, that you and I believe, are going through something of a time of distress. It may not be persecution against us Christians, but it's distressing whenever our world is kind of turned upside down and things change for us. And we have to adjust the way that we live and we have to make sacrifices for one another, that kind of thing. And those times challenge our focus. They challenge our hope. And it is now that we need to remember that our focus is not on this world at all. This world is not our focus. This world is not our home. But rather, it is passing away. So what have you turned to for hope in these times? Have you turned to your relationships or your marriage? Have you focused on earthly joys and your possessions? Or have these times challenged you to turn to God? That's my hope. That as we look at this passage, we look at what Paul is saying, in times of present distress, we focus on what is eternal. Someone wrote about this passage that we shouldn't busy ourselves rearranging the furniture on the deck of the Titanic, because we know what happens. Don't spend your life just rearranging the priorities in this world and think that it's, you know, I'm all good to go. Instead, focus on what comes after this world, because this world is sinking. This world is shortly going to end. If you are not a Christian this morning, where are you going to be in eternity? I think that's the question that Paul wants us to ask at this point. Where are you going to be when your life comes to an end? Are you going to be in heaven with the Lord? Or are you going to suffer eternal separation from God? The one who has given you all hope and the one who has given you life. If you're not a Christian, we plead with you to think about your relationship with God. And if you are a Christian, maybe you have some spiritual need. Let that be known. We're here to help you, to pray with you. Let that be as we stand and as we sing to encourage you.